B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Boston sports fans start their day with Toucher and Rich.
I can't think that could be interesting.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We're Toucher and Rich, and in this time of great boredom, we are trying to give you something to give you a little break here. Rich, it is a bracket, even though there is no bracket, of the best bits we feel that we've done over the course of our show. It's not like we can send Nick out right now. I don't think Brookline 911 would be that funny, even though that.
Although
guy
if we get calls like the guy from Arlington,
exactly, that would be funny. But Rich, what do we got here?
Well, there's a certain athlete that when he speaks, we all listen. Let's get to the tape.
Oh, but it was a glorious day on Saturday night when you got to tune in. You knew it was going to be special, where before he even came out on stage, after everyone else's speeches, they said Ray Lewis has opted to not use a podium. He's instead going to be using a headset microphone, and that's when you just grab the popcorn and it's on.
So I'm going to pace the stage.
So Ray Lewis made it out on stage, and the crowd, there was a little video they showed beforehand, involved a lot of white suits that were missing, and a lot of blood. And so he came out and was just right away said, "Hey, I'm Ray Lewis. What do you want from me?"
And what people want is me talk incoherently about how important I am.
That's right. You have it right there, friend.
I do have it. And I will get to it this moment.
When God tells you something, believe it.
That's right. God told me, get up here and start talking crazy. God told me, hey, that knife is an extension of your hand. Use it wisely, Ray. God told me, he said, get up here and make an ass of yourself. I'm going to talk for 35 minutes.
It was great, man.
After all these other guys talked, allow me 35 minutes to waste your time completely.
Oh, no, not a waste.
Except for the Toucher and Rich show, which is very pleased.
When God tells you something, believe it. Listen to me. No matter the journey, it's too many ups and downs. But boy, when you believe it, 515-75.
That is my lotto number. Can anyone check the iPhone? Did it come through? Powerball, 6. And then 11 tree cloud grass.
8675-309.
Don't call that number, though. They've been harassed enough. Squiggly line, then. Squealing on that the teacher and Charlie Brown when they write what they're saying. Big pen.
515-75.
It's half my phone number.
But boy, when you believe it, 515-75.
That's how much I'll sell this jacket for.
Remember 5 and remember 7, because they're going to have a recurring attitude in my message.
Yeah, remember the 5 and 7.
That 5's got a bad attitude.
That does.
It's a recurring attitude in this message.
Let her be. Let her be. Remember that from Sesame Street? Let her be. Let her be. Also remember the word clown. Because I'll get back to that.
Okay. It's a big market tease.
Wow.
Do you remember the great song, Peaches and Herb? Did they do really nice?
Yeah, they did, as a matter of fact, yes.
Yeah, I like that song. Remember that, too. And Ray, if I may, remember to buy lettuce and milk.
$5.15.75, my mother had me. We had no other route out.
Oh, that's his birthday?
Yes. Okay. Oh, that's his birthday, 5.15.75.
I thought it was some Bible thing.
No,
that's his birthday. Remember that number, because it's on all my fake documents. Jesus, he's a couple months younger than me.
Because that woman right there, 5.15.75. You hear me? Yeah. Crazy, right?
Yes.
You were born.
Hey.
Crazy, right?
Wow. Yes.
I just see him, like, pointing at Shelley Long. See that woman right there? She was in the show Cheers.
Yes. Crazy, right?
Yeah, it is. She gave your Hall of Fame ceremony.
Yes, this is not the time.
What's Diane doing here?
That's right. Her and Sam. You never knew. It kept you tuned in every week. Sitcom Ray Lewis is back.
Sitcom Ray Lewis? What are you doing, sitcom?
Look at the great Alex Karros. He's a member of the Hall of Fame, but I remember more of him as the adoptive father of Webster.
Okay, right. He was on Webster. He was.
And he had the guts and fortitude to marry Madam. Even though you could tell Madam might not like boys.
True.
Just shoot it. It's the name of this. For real, that's what the guy said. He said, just shoot me, Ray.
But I stabbed him instead.
Well, what you gonna do?
Yeah. Crazy, right? Tell you about numbers, 5.15.75, right? I play 17 years. I go to the University of Miami, right? And I get signed one of the last scholarships ever given.
Ever.
No more scholarships, ever.
Once you sign it, we're done.
That's it.
Remember this. 5.15.75.
5.15.75.
I signed a scholarship at Miami.
Crazy, crazy, right?
I'm just remembering things.
I mean, he's 45 seconds in.
I know. He's just like, this is like the preamble to warming up.
The motorcycle hasn't
35
even,
minutes worth.
Hasn't even like cool, like warmed up yet.
Barely turned the engine over.
And the coach asked me, Randy Shannon asked me, what was the number you wanted? He said, the last numbers we got.
I said, 5.15.75.
5.15.75.
Can you give that to me?
No, you can only have two numbers. You can only have two numbers, Ray.
Like I said, 5.15.75. What's the problem?
Crazy, right?
He makes no sense.
Would you like to hear the rest of his sentence?
There's more?
Yes, I would say so. Pick a number.
Q.
And the coach asked me, Randy Shannon asked me, what was the number you wanted? He said, the last numbers we got is these numbers. And I looked, and those numbers was 5 and 2. And I said, give me that 52. He said, why you like 52? I said, because, B-Dog, that's God's number. That's completion.
Of course it is. How did I not see that? That's what Randy Shannon said back to him. Of course it is.
We only have two numbers, 5 and 2. Then give me 52. See, that number's not available.
Crazy, right?
Because that's God's number. He sits up on a cloud with a 52 jersey on.
That's right. Jesus wore on the cross a number 52.
Yeah.
But I remember they were used to play back when Jesus was leading everyone. They would play flag football. And Jesus always said, give me 52.
B-Dog, that's God's number. I played 17 years. I leave 17 years. I go play in Super Bowl 47. I get inducted to go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Super Bowl 52. Man, God, something else. Man, God.
I'm getting my calculator out of it.
Damn.
What is it?
I played 14 seasons. I was born in 1975. Then on March 8th, I ate at the Golden Corral. 3-8.
5-15-75.
Crazy, right? I mean, that's nuts.
Crazy, right?
I mean, there's so many numbers there. It's crazy. That was when I was on The Price is Right. I was playing Plinko. That toaster's 5-15-75.
Is this Game Show Ray Lewis?
Game Show Ray Lewis. Those jokers are wild. I'll tell you what. Then I go and play Plinko, and everything comes up Ray. I was in the Showcase Showdown.
Were you Game Show Ray Lewis?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a trailer and a jet ski in a living room set.
Yeah, right. And what did you bid on?
5-15-75.
5-15-75.
Oh, that crazy climbing guy's going, don't fall, fool. Don't fall. 5-15-75, 52, 17. All right. Don't fall.
Crazy, right?
How much for the toothpaste, God. Ray? $1,572.
I go play in Super Bowl 47. I get inducted to go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Super Bowl 52. Man, God, something else. Man, God, something else. Man, God, something else. Numbers, numbers, numbers. You can play with numbers, but some numbers you can never change.
Numbers. Numbers. And then he turns to his family.
There's nothing in life that I will not sacrifice for my babies. My first son, Ray the Third, Rashad, Diamond, Rasan, Raylan, Raven, KK. And what I love the most is our relationship. Because I told you the greatest thing I can give you as a father is the truth. What I didn't have, the touches and the hugs and the kisses that I give you, I never had that. I never had a father physically touch me and tell me he loved me. That's why I hug you guys so much. That's why I'm still kissing you in the mouth.
He's talking about kids, so I'll leave that one. I'll leave that one.
All four kids, by the way.
They're all grown.
I know. All four kids are looking at him. They're all shaking their heads.
As soon as he's like, get that camera off me.
Nope. I want no part of this.
Yeah, I just.
That's why I'm still kissing you in the mouth.
All four kids are like, oh, get me out of here.
Now come up here on stage one at a time and let daddy give you a smooch.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Right. Baltimore. 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 Baltimore.
I think the Raybot 2000 just shut down.
That's right. It's a glitch.
That's right.
I remember that. 5-15-75.
That's right.
The greatest visionary ever. The greatest visionary ever to me was Art Modell.
Oh, Jesus. He was like Kreskin. He could take a pack of cards and he'd say, look at the card, don't show it to me. Then I would say, I'll take the 5, the 15, and the 7 and the 5.
5-15-75.
And every time he could produce it, he would take two rings and he'd say, Ray, try to get him apart. And I'd say, Art, I can't do it. And then Art Modell would take him. And voila. He could separate him.
And he magically removed an NFL franchise from one city in the middle of the night and moved it to another. A visionary.
Hey, people of Ohio, where I'm speaking, in Canton, Our motel's the best. Remember when he took your team?
I just heard that. It's like, out of all the people you're going to mention tonight as the biggest visionary, I don't think that really comes across.
No, I'm in Canton, Ohio. Hey.
This team taught me grown man football. That's what 2000 taught me. But I tell you, there was a moment in my life, and I want to kind of get to this moment. There's a moment. My guy, Rex.
Okay, so right here, they're showing Rex Ryan's face.
And he's just like, oh, boy.
It's like, my guy, Rex. He goes, you know, there's something I want to talk about. And I think that everyone knows kind of what's coming. And he goes, my guy, Rex. They show Rex Ryan's face as he's about to launch into this. And it's like,
he's mortified.
Of all the people to put the camera on, he's thinking, why did you put it on me when he's going to talk about this?
Yeah, he's mortified.
And it stayed on him for like 30 seconds.
He's like, oh, boy.
And everyone else in the organization is going, please don't mention my name.
Yeah, please don't talk about it.
Don't say my name.
1999, 2001 may have been some of the darkest moments of my life.
But Rex Ryan enabled me. Rex Ryan, you were someone who helped stash my jacket.
But I tell you something. When God says, can you hear me now? He sends you a family.
Of Verizon phones. Can you hear me now?
When you're in trouble, just remember, just do it.
I tried to call the police, but they said, can you hear me now? And I said, no, I don't have enough bars. I can't hear you now.
Can you hear me now? He sends you a family to make sure you're okay while you're going through what you're going through. What you did for me, what my Atlanta family did for me, Mona Lisa, listen to you. What y'all did for me, Steve Bisciotti. What you believed in me
and kept letting me play and make money.
Steve Bisciotti's like, God, why'd you mention me? Oh,
you didn't suspend me or say two words to me because I was good at football. You let it all help me sweep it all under the rug.
By the way, what you're about to play, not edited. Not edited.
All right.
What you believed in me? Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps. What? What? How many times, man, you sat in the same house looking at each other? What we said, Baltimore is our city.
Hang on. So he's in the middle of talking about, like, when he was in trouble for murder. And he goes,
right.
What you guys did for me during that dark time? Michael Phelps, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, Florence Henderson.
I mean, just like,
what you believed in me? Michael Phelps.
All right. All right. So the numbers in Rich has been obsessing over what he could mean.
I just couldn't get it out of my head. And so once again, indulge me because I came in this morning and I just had to get it out of my head and put it onto the computer. And this is what it came out with.
Daddy, I got no numbers. You can play with numbers, but some numbers you can never change. Daddy, don't change your numbers. 515. 515-575.
That's why I'm still kissing you in the mouth.
And now that's going to be in your head all day, just like it was mine.
Yep.
It's going to be stuck there, and it will not leave.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Toucher, Rich, Wallach, and you.
Dan, go ahead.
What could possibly go wrong?
Fred, you are infuriating.
It's Toucher and Rich.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I ain't no joke. I used to let the mic smoke. Now I slam it when I'm done and make sure it's broke. When I'm gone, no one gets on, cause I won't let nobody press up and mess up the scene I set. I like to stand in a crowd and watch the people wonder, damn. But think about it, then you understand. I'm just an addict, addicted to music. Maybe it's a habit.
Man, what's Wallach doing? Even if
it's jazz or the quiet, I'm just sitting here.
He has a good smile on his face. The promo that ran before this, it's something that John's... He's feeling all right. Don't ask him to stand up.
He loves Rakim. Or Rakim. I'm sorry, Rakim. 98.5 to Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. And Bert Breer is the head honcho over there at MMQB. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. Breer, thank you for joining us.
What's up, Fred? I like your new haircut.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's going to be like an advent calendar to see how long this goes.
Reminded me of the movie. You remember the movie Higher Learning from the 90s? Yes. Like that picture on Instagram sort of reminded me of that.
Oh, Jesus.
So you're saying he looks like a white supremacist?
Oh, man. Yeah, look like
that's
skinhead.
Not good.
It's weird because I saw the picture, right? And you just... And I thought of, like, that character. Was it, who was it to play that character? You guys, what's his name? God, whoever it was. But
I think American History X. Like, I mean, when you say, like, white supremacist movies, that's kind of the one that comes to mind. Higher Learning was, who was in that? I forget.
Omar Epps was in that.
Michael Rapaport
was the white supremacist who starts shooting people at the end, and Omar Epps is the hero. Yes.
That's right, because that was when Omar Epps was like the athlete in every movie, right?
Right. That's so, right. The program. That's right. Yep.
Yeah. And he was like skinhead. Yeah. And so when I saw the look on his face, it was just that look on that character's face right after he shaved his head. Like, so congrats, Fred. You look like that guy.
Yeah. I'm a skinhead now.
He looks like a bald Michael Rapaport.
Wonderful.
Well, I could do it could be worse. I've been called worse.
Hey, it was more the facial expression than anything else, but you didn't mean to sell it, but you sold it.
Yeah, thank you. I was wearing red suspenders, too. All right, so were you just running? I've been told.
Oh, yeah, I just got done running, yep. And I think I got better service here than in my house, so I'm good.
In the rain?
It's pouring down rain where you are.
It's the only thing that's keeping me sane is my ability to get outside the house for at least an hour a day to go running.
Dude, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Your wife's... And what's that?
Are you drinking?
Well, at night I am, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
All right, okay.
And your wife's like on the front lines, right?
Yeah, so she's... I mean, she works with children, so... They don't have the same volume of stuff that that the other hospitals do, but I mean, I tell you guys, I thank a doctor, thank a nurse whenever you run into one, because it's scary. Like for her, like what they're going through there. I mean, you know, she walks into the hospital, they ask her a bunch of questions, you know, hand her a mask. They're rationing the masks right now. I mean, give the crafts tons of credit for what they did, because that's definitely needed. You know, and then, you know, they, you know, obviously are a lot of their resources are going to help the other hospitals. So it's a scary situation. And yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up, Rich.
Well, can you kind of explain, because we were talking about this morning, because there was the million, like 1.2 million masks that were going to the doctors and nurses that the whole craft thing did. And a lot of people are like, well, that seems like there's not a million cases, but you know, these masks are used like multiple masks a day. Can you kind of explain how many are used on a normal shift and why that amount is so necessary?
Well, on a normal shift, Emily would go in and she wouldn't need one all the time. Like there'd be times when she'd need them and then they'll wear it once and they'll dispose of it, right? So, I mean, there could be days where she goes through a number of them, you know, and not even think about it. Well, now she goes in and she went in on Saturday for her shift. Walks in, you know, she gets in, she works 7 to 7. And so she'll get in at the 6 o'clock hour, walk in, there's security in the front. She's got to answer a bunch of questions about who she's been in contact with and everything else. And then they give her a mask and she can't take the mask off the whole day because they're only giving her one for the day. That's how they're rationing them right now. So she's wearing the mask all day, which obviously, you know, makes it a little more difficult to work because it's hard to breathe in those. But, you know, that's the situation they're all in. They're all trying to take care of each other. And so, what the crafts did was, I can't say it's freaking awesome. Governor Baker, Jonathan and Robert Kraft, what they did was incredible.
All right, so speaking of people being sick, the NFL did a little bit of a 180 yesterday. So, I mean, they were getting a ton of crap for people killing them about, like, there being no kind of flexibility with the beginning of the season. They basically, anytime like Jeff Pasch or anyone who spoke for the league was saying, well, no, we are going to start on time. This is how it's going to be done. And then yesterday, was it like the league's head doctor came out and said, no, this is not necessary. We cannot do this unless there's testing for people. And
Alan Stills is his
name. Alan Stills, can you kind of explain why the 180? Was it just totally because of the backlash that they received all around the country because of that?
Oh, I think it 100% was. And listen, guys, the problem wasn't them saying we're preparing for a full season. Of course they're preparing for a full season. The problem was saying we're not worrying about any contingency plans. We're full steam ahead. The 2020 season is going to happen. All of our experts are telling us the same thing. We're gung-ho going towards 2020. Yeah, there's a possibility, but we're not worried about that right now. And, you know, I think the issue with that, of course, is the sort of message it sends. And it's basically telling people, and there are a lot of people who listen to the NFL, that, you know, people who are looking for optimism, it's giving them false hope, you know, that they don't need to worry as much and that there is an end date for this. And, I mean, I just think, like, when they said what they said, it was aimed at the business community. It was aimed at sponsors. It was aimed at advertisers. It was aimed at their partners because they know big business is hurting right now. And so big business is not going to be spending the same way they were before. So they're sending the message to big business, well, hey, look, we're going to be here, and you're going to want to spend with us in the fall because we're going to put on a season. And most of all, like, they're talking to their TV partners who they'll be negotiating new television deals with soon. And so, you know, I think that the message was intended for the business community. And, you know, I think that that was sort of what they were prepared, the messaging they were preparing for that conference call. And, you know, what I don't think that they properly recognized was there's a lot of people in the public who are listening to them, and they sent a really, really dangerous message to those people.
All right, Bert, back to football. The Volin has created a scenario where the Patriots would trade Tooney, the picks 23 and 87, to trade with the Lions to get Tua. Now, do you think they would be interested in him, and do you think they'd be willing to give up that kind of capital, and do you think that would be enough to move to the third pick?
That's a fun scenario. I don't think it'd be enough. I mean, I don't know. I know Detroit is open to moving out of three, but I think they still want to come away with a blue chip player. And so I think what they're interested in doing is drumming up a market with the Dolphins at five and the Chargers at six. That way they can pick up some more capital and still walk away with one of the four elite defensive players in the draft. That's Chase Young, Jeff Okuda, Derek Brown, and Isaiah Simmons. And so, you know, would the Patriots be interested in Tua? I'm sure they'd have an interest in Tua. He's, you know, despite all the medical stuff, really, really good player. He's a risk from a medical standpoint, but has a chance. This is what the Bama coaches are telling people, and I'm sure Nick has said this to Bill. They see him as a left-handed Drew Brees. So if you have the opportunity to go up and get him, I can see where you would do that. Going from 23 to 3, it's a long way to go. I think you would at the very least, have to give up a future first-round pick to do it. And don't forget, guys, that Lions staff, all those guys are fighting for their jobs this year. And so, I mean, you go down to 23, you're probably not getting a player who's going to be an impact player on day one.
Yeah.
Okay, so receiver is very deep in this draft. And what is the deal with the offensive linemen? Is there five elite and then it just drops off completely?
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, there's a drop-off after the top four. Ty Beckton from Louisville, Tristan Wirfs from Iowa.
Did you do the boat, Bert? What are you doing?
Bert, you sound like you're in a tsunami.
Yeah, there's no running during this, Bert. You got to stay still.
Well, I'm outside. It's raining. I'm under a tree right now. I thought this would be the least windy place.
Well, then you're in a hurricane.
Well, then you've really mismanaged that because it's exceptionally windy.
It doesn't feel that windy to me, but maybe it's the phone. I don't know.
Now the wind is coming. Now the wind is coming.
Bert, I appreciate you coming on the show, and I appreciate you doing it. But we're going to have to.
We can pick it. If you guys want to pick it up a little later in the show, we can do it. I'm fine. If the wind's too much. If it wins too much for you guys, it's not too much for me, but if it's too much for you guys, I'm all good.
Yeah, we'll talk to you later. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we will. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it, man.
Bye bye.
One quick thing about Tua.
Jesus, man.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, I did that on purpose at the end.
Oh, did you?
I raised the level just a little bit. But yeah, is he on a boat? What was he doing?
Oh, my God.
He's under a tree?
Ugh. But he's right, man. You do anything to get out of the house nowadays, even if it's in the rain.
And it's no joke out there.
I didn't leave the house yesterday.
It's 42 degrees, windy, and raining, and he's outside running.
And then tomorrow is going to be crap, too. What were you going to say about Tua?
How did he get a physical? I thought all NFL-related physicals were no-go these days.
I think it's not an official physical. I think it's just – if I read this correctly, isn't it like a –
independent doctor that was approved by all 32 NFL team physicians, but it's still NFL related.
Here's the deal that you guys got to realize, that if I'm a guy from Middle Tennessee State, I'm not getting a physical. If I'm a guy who could be a top 10 pick, they're finding a way to get me a physical.
Yeah, and I don't think you're breaking rules if Tua is the one who gets this, because you have to understand, it benefits Tua to prove to these players that he, these teams, that he's healthy.
Sure.
So
but
he probably is the one who said, I'm going to get this doctor. Listen, you guys, everyone sign off on him so you know he's not a quack. And he's going to give, I'm going to pay for it. He's going to give me an examination and send you the results. I guarantee you that's what happened. What's illegal is for the teams to pay for it and to set these things up.
Well, regardless, if you're a $1 billion, again, if you're a $1 billion, and I told you this about Brady, if you're a $1 billion industry and you're gonna rest your hopes on someone, a player, you're going to find out about the player. You're going to get a physical. Now, who it hurts is some guy that you would take in the fifth round from some small college.
Get his pro day. You only have tape on him, but you haven't seen him in person.
Yeah, they're not going to risk anything by doing that. But please, believe me, if you're going to be a first-round pick, they're going to find out about you. The coronavirus be damned. They're going to find out about you.
Yesterday wipes out any doubt about Tua. I mean, look, he might get hurt again. It happens to quarterbacks. But yesterday was big for him. Big.
Yeah. All right. You ready, Wallach?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Wallach gives us a master class in 90210 coming up.
All right.
All right, here are the headlines. Roger and Red. Knows more about 90210 than our own John Wallach.
It's fascinating to me. It's all 90s, like, smooth R&B at 90210.
That's right.
That is Wallach's wheelhouse.
Just silk ties and...
Yep.
Wallach's wheelhouse? Is that what we're going to call this, Dan? Is that what you just said?
I love that name. Wallach's wheelhouse. Yeah, he gets all excited.
Yeah. My dog finally likes me. Right here. All right. So, John, what episode are we tackling today? Because I can chime in as well.
Well, we're in the sweet spot of season 3. We were talking about this earlier in the show. You don't want anything from the first 2 seasons because they were just kind of ramping up to when they really kind of got going. And for my money, Fred, the show really didn't start until we got to season 3 in the senior year for the kids. And the episode that I'm going to focus on, you know, there's a lot of trouble. You know, everyone, there's not a lot of good news happening with the gang. And we all know about Brandon Walsh and how he's the goody-goody of everyone. And he always seems to make all the right moves and say all the right things and act accordingly. Well, a lot of people forgot that Brandon had a gambling problem for a long period of time, and it kind of manifested itself in season 3, where he really started making bets with a bookie named Duke, who used to work out of the Peach Pit and was a good friend of Nat Basiccio. And Brandon was about as bad a gambler as you can possibly have. And, you know, the Bankroll Boys, as much as they hit on all of their bets, and Rich, they've made you a lot of money, Brandon couldn't, you know, pick a point spread to save his life. And he started running deep into debt with a bookie named Duke, and Duke is, you know, not one of those, you know, high school bookies. He's one of those guys that'll break an arm if you fall behind on your payment. And so this is a significant portion of this episode where Brandon fell deep into debt, about $1,500 into debt. And for a high school senior, that's a big problem. And so to kind of cover his gambling debts, he actually hit up a bookie at West Beverly High School. And I wasn't aware that bookies operated out of West Beverly High School. But there you have it. And Brandon missed a couple of games there, running further into debt. So this was kind of the theme throughout the episode. He was in a lot of trouble for most of the afternoon and evening as we got into the episode. And the big problem with all of that was that it made him more and more desperate, and clearly not himself, to be honest, as we moved along in the episode. Now, that's in one corner. In the other corner is Kelly Taylor, and Kelly Taylor has fallen in love with Dylan, you see, because Brenda was, you know, had her semester abroad in Paris, and those two kids fell in love on the beach one night while the Grunion were running. Kelly and Dylan really had a great romance, and, you know, they tried to hide it from Brenda for a while, but then Brenda found out and got upset with Dylan. So it was Kelly and Dylan dating while, you know, Brenda had turned her back on them. And Dylan had had a lot of trouble with his father over the years, but his father showed up a couple of episodes previous to this and, you know, got in with Dylan right as he was about to inherit his trust fund. So you see a lot of different, you know, stories kind of weaving their way through this episode. And, you know, Dylan, as much as he fell back in love with his father, and the two of them would be on his yacht together, you know, his father's yacht together, Dylan unfortunately watched his father get blown to bits when he opened up his car door. And that sent Dylan into a tailspin. And, you know, Kelly, during the funeral before this episode, really had trouble connecting with Dylan. So she, you know, all of a sudden feels like Dylan is slipping away from her. And, you know, then she worries about whether or not she's pretty enough for Dylan. And that's where the diet pills come in. And Kelly has a lot of trouble with the diet pills. And so she's kind of falling off. You know, she's taking these diet pills. She's worrying about her appearance and not acting like herself. So Brandon's out of control. Kelly's out of control. You know, Brenda's not happy with either of them. Not many people liking other people. And in the meantime, you have David Silver over here on the right-hand side, who is, you know, a rapper at this point. And you remember earlier in the season where, you know, Steve was, you know, kind of managing David and getting him all these gigs. And, you know, once you know, David started, yes.
Okay, I'm on the station dumped both me and Rich. So
is that right? Oh, okay.
Yes, I'm here to help.
Okay. Well, I was just explaining how Brandon, you know, fell into a $1,500 debt with, you know, a bookie named Duke worked out of the Peach Pit. And then you had Dylan, who watched his father get blown up in front of him a couple of episodes before this. And so, you know, he's in a state. He's not the most cheerful kid to begin with. And then he's dating Kelly Taylor now because Brenda went to Paris on her semester abroad and Dylan fell in love with Kelly.
With Tori Spelling.
Yes, that's right.
With Tori Spelling. So, and she met Bo Hunk.
Yes, that's right. Dean Cain, the actor Dean Cain. That's right. That was a big kind of sidelight there. So Kelly and Dylan are dating, but Dylan just watched his father get killed. So Kelly's worried that Dylan is slipping away from her, and she turns to diet pills because she's worried about her appearance. This is a big problem for her. And, you know, David, I was just...
That was a big situation. I'm getting feedback on my phone,
which is not good. That's not good.
But there is... But that was a thing in the 90s, is that the diet pills, the over-the-counter diet pills, were like the crack cocaine of the mid-90s.
Yes.
If you look at Saved by the Bell and what have you.
I agree. I'm so excited. Yeah, that everyone, all
that
pills
one
were
was
big
on
thing.
Yesterday.
Yes,
we
that's
watched
right.
Those, yeah, we watched that yesterday.
That's right. So you have all of that going on, and then there's David Silver, who's a wannabe rapper, and had, you know, started his career. And remember, he had Steve manage him for a couple of episodes, and then that didn't work, and David ran into some major representation. He had a producer who wanted to produce David's album, but the problem was the producer gave David a song he didn't think was very good, and that was a big debate during this episode.
David had integrity. And he was the thing.
Didn't want to do it, and was like, well, if I go against this producer, whose name I believe was Serge, that, you know, what can I do? I mean, if I give away this opportunity, I may not get another chance. And ultimately, he decides that he thinks the song is terrible, he won't do it, and insults the producer by saying, you know, you're just a hack. You're not any good. I mean, I can't even look at you. And walks out of the studio with his head held high. So, I mean...
David's showing that it's not all about money. There is artistic integrity.
That's right. And so, after that happens, Fred, you still have Dylan over here who's very depressed and he can't connect with Kelly, and he's wondering what to do with all of these emotions, Fred. What do I do with these emotions? In steps Andrea Zuckerman, who's kind of been to the side this entire episode, and Andrea says to Dylan, you know what? The true way to express your feelings, Dylan, is not to go to therapy, not to talk it out with your friends. You should just write all this stuff down in a journal. That'll really solve your problems. So that's what Dylan does towards the end of this episode. Dylan decides he's going to write all of his feelings down, what it was like to be Jack McKay's son, what it was like to, you know, kind of go through all of this, and maybe someone will write it. But if no one, someone will read it, but if no one reads it, at least it'll be cathartic for me. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those things that really is necessary. But don't forget Brandon, who I started this whole thing with. Brandon still has to pay up the bookie. And there comes a very big moment at the end of the episode where Brandon owes his bookie $1,500 and doesn't have it. And he shows up at the Peach Pit fully expecting his legs to get broken, because Duke's a no-nonsense type of guy. In over $1,500, you know, who wouldn't break your legs over $1,500? But he walks in and Duke, you know, is sitting at the counter, and Duke taps him on the shoulder, said, "And kid, you dodged a bullet," and walks out. And it turns out Nat Bisticcio, who has no money, really, you know, he's managing a Peach Pit. I don't know where he's going to find $1,500, but he pays Brandon's gambling debt, and everyone is safe and everyone is happy by the end of the episode.
Okay, and then, I don't mean to butt in here. Real quick, Fred, I don't mean to butt in, because I know apparently you and I both dropped, and which is awesome, because from what I'm hearing, it was a glorious 4 to 5 minutes of radio of Wally by himself.
Guys, I honestly John may have thought I did that on purpose. Like, had you both drop at the same time during this storm. All of a sudden, I said to John in his headphones, I'm like, Fred and Rich are gone. And he was like, what?
No, come on.
No, you were doing well, John. You were doing well.
Hang on a second. All right. Rich, are you on the phone or did you get back?
No. I got back. Like, you hop on. You're back. It was the station. Anyway. Something happened at the station, obviously, because you and I, if we both drop at the same time, it's not our side of things. But the storm just sucks. But, I mean, the best part of it is, I guarantee you, Wallach thought, Dan, you did that on purpose. That this was all set up to
thought
just
that
make
too, Rich,
just to hear him flounder. Do me a favor. I want to, okay, like in the 9 o'clock hour, Tracy, can you isolate the amount of Wallach talking by himself and having to carry the entire thing on his... I want to hear this. I need to hear this. The frustration. And how'd you do, John? Were you able to hang in there?
I have the material down cold. So I'm zipped through it.
Dan.
Ask Dan.
There you are, Fred.
Ask him.
You're back, Fred.
All right.
You're back.
Now you can hear me.
Yeah. We can hear you just fine. Okay. You're good.
Okay. All right. I'm back. All right.
Something at the station got all screwy. So
Dan, did I struggle during those 4 or 5 minutes?
You didn't, but be perfectly honest with you, John, I'll give you credit here. You did not know that Fred and Rich had dropped. So where you may have paused to expect some sort of interaction with them,
that did happen.
They just weren't there.
That did happen, and Dan's like, they're not there. They both got disconnected. So we just kept going. So
John just went right back and said, I'm going to power through this.
At least you're in your wheelhouse. You're in your wheelhouse. All right, we'll be right back.
It's Wallach's wheelhouse. Yep.
There you go. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.